Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast with Kay Shinieri. This is episode 21. 21 is the legal drinking age in America. 21 is when you multiply 7 times 3. And 21 is, Kay, any thoughts?
When you're winning blackjack.
Exactly. Not that it has anything to do with this episode, but today, do we have drinks first and foremost?
We're recording this on a different time than we usually do, so I only have a glass of water.
Okay. I have a bottle of what was meant to be for... Actually, there's like a bit left. It's a grape-flavored water from Natural Lawson. I guess I'll take a picture of the empty bottle and include it in the show notes, but it's very delicious, you know.
So now it's the plastic waste and stuff.
Yeah, it feels a little underwhelming to send a picture of an empty bottle. So I'll omit that out. I won't send you a picture. I have to throw it out anyway.
All right. So what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about copywriting. What is copywriting and such?
That's great. So that's straight out of your area of expertise, and I guess something I can learn a lot about listening to you talk today.
You don't need it. Don't worry.
So yeah. So where do we start? What is copywriting? I think a lot of people have this basic question.
Yeah. So what is copywriting? Copywriting is any form of writing done to get a user, or not even a user, a person to take action. It's writing done to take a user to take action or influence them. So you will see any text that you see on an advertisement, on whether it's a video, whether it's, you know, a picture, or whether it's a landing page that requires text, all of that in there has been written by a copywriter with the goal of one thing: to get the user to convert. And if it's not related to sales, then it's the job there is to get the user to sign up or take action of some sort. Like, yeah, I want to get this free thing. So essentially, long story short, copywriting is writing to persuade. More importantly, it's writing for action in sales.
All right. So it doesn't necessarily have to be to convert to get somebody to buy something. It could be to get somebody to take whatever the action that you want them to do is, right? So even like subscribe to our free newsletter is a form of copywriting, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. That would be done by a copywriter too.
Awesome. So I guess we kind of went over it, but if you could talk a bit about what the difference is between like normal writing, between writing articles, between writing blog posts, and between copywriting, and if usually the skill sets are kind of overlapping or if they're a bit different. And I think we'll go deeper into that later, but just on the surface.
Yeah. So essentially, what's the difference between article writing and copywriting? Well, one, article writing is, by definition, you would have someone write up content or information about a certain subject, whether it's, say, you know, dog training or aviation or, I don't know, Japanese toilets or candy, right?
Yeah.
Basically, over there, it's purely informational, and the goal there is to, you know, give the user information, whatever information they came there to find. Now, that doesn't exactly have to be a copywriter's job. So, but like you said, there's gray area and it can overlap. A copywriter can go in there and be like, all right, how can I turn this article to something that converts people to go from just reading the article to, say, joining the newsletter based on an article? Again, the biggest difference is action in sales. Not exactly necessary if you're writing content that just purely informational.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's pretty clear.
But, you know, there could be some overlap. But for the most part, you don't need really any copy skills for that. You just have to have, like, writing skills.
If it wants to start, like, a side hustle doing writing, would you recommend starting marketing yourself as a copywriter? Or do you think it's better to start as a regular, quote-unquote, regular writer? Or does it really depend on the person?
Well, it depends on their experience. Because I think just because one has done copy does not mean they're a good copywriter. You know, it's if they want to start a side hustle, I guess, as a copywriter, but those are kind of two different questions in one, you know.
Yeah,
if one is to start a side hustle as a copywriter, then their main job is to learn copy and practice it in action and learn from that, versus writing. You know, writing, there could be all kinds of writing. There could be academic writing, there could be, you know, informational writing for blogs.
Yeah.
So it really depends upon the person if they want to pursue copywriting as a side hustle or not.
Okay, that makes sense. I guess it's like if somebody wants to be a musician, it's the difference between being a rock and roll singer and a jazz singer.
Something to that tune. And well, copy also, has, I guess, different elements than, you know, regular writing. For example, if you take a look at your blog, or if you take a look at most essays, there's an introduction, beginning, and an end. There's a certain style to how you write. There are certain things you absolutely must include. And this is where, you know, copy differs from other writing. There are different elements that are absolutely required in copy. And if you see a piece of writing that contains these elements, then you can pretty much be assured that, you know, you're reading sales copy. For example, every piece of copy should come with a headline of sorts that grabs your attention. Every copy always presents an offer. You can say that's the benefit or whatever is free. Every piece of copy usually comes with a call to action, meaning click here to sign up now, click here to join now. And it also includes various ways to boost conversion by, you know, either pressing on urgency or scarcity or something else that minimizes risk. Like, you know, you get a 100 or 60 day or 100 day money back guarantee. So if, you know, if the writing has these kind of elements, whether the headline, offer, benefit, call to action, urgency, scarcity, then you are, you know, reading copy. And those are the essential elements of copywriting. Those are what make it work. You know, the other things that I kind of wanted to touch upon is when people talk about advertising, especially like regular people, they're like, what, 10 spots left or, you know, 5 hours left? You know, that'll never work on me. I can see right through you. Ha ha. But these things work, and that's why they're used. So yeah, that's the point I wanted to make.
I see. So could I give you some example of something, and can you try to give me these five elements?
Sure.
Part of it. All right. So okay, I'm looking at my Saturn V Rocket Lego right now. How about mm-hmm. that one? Can you sell it to me again?
Is this like an email or a letter? What are you reading?
Yeah. Let's say I'm subscribed to some sort of a Lego newsletter.
Yeah.
And they want to sell me this rocket.
Yeah. So what would be the five elements or the X elements or so?
Yeah. So we mentioned the five or six elements: the headline, the offer, the benefit, the CTA, and the call to action and the urgency/scarcity.
Yeah.
So how would you
recommend? There could be more elements, but those are the basic, most basic ones. So the headline would be like, for example, brand new rocket from Lego, get 50% off till Friday only. That's the headline, and that's the headline also kind of presents the offer. The headline, of course, can be something different, but the goal of the headline is always to stop the reader in their, or whoever's browsing around in their tracks, to read the rest of the copy. So the headline can contain the offer or contain something of a curiosity element of sorts to get you to open it if it's an email and get you to continue reading it. So that would be the headline and offer and benefit. You know, like you open the email and say, we've just released a brand new rocket. You know, it's shiny, it's gold. If you're a big fan of NASA, this is the fifth collaboration between Lego and NASA, for example. And in this text right here, you know, you're already kind of appealing to the demographic that one is into space and two is into Lego. And the rest is, you know, simply put, call to action, you know, click here to get 30% off or 50% off right now. Yeah. Urgency. You know, we only have 100 Lego kits of this sort made. So, you know, if you want to get yours, click the link, because they'll run out fast. So those are elements of urgency and scarcity.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that makes it kind of clear what we're talking about here with a practical example.
Yeah. So essentially, those are the essential elements of copy. It should always have a headline that captures someone's attention. It should have an offer. What are you getting? What is presented to you? For example, it could be like, get five things free or get 30% off. Get one pizza free when you buy one. What are the benefits? You know, piping hot pizza, call to action. You always, always want to give a person the next step to do, hence the call to action. One more element, and that's proof. It's funny, all these things start coming to me now. But it is like almost 9 o'clock, so.
Hey, that's a new element. That should be a new episode.
It should be, but proof, you know, essentially when you're making an offer and when you're talking about benefits, if you say something outlandish, then you have to kind of expect what the reader is going to react with next and be like, is that really for real? Then you have to follow up with some proof. Like, for example, our red t-shirt will make you stand out 25% more in a crowd of people. Be like, oh yeah, well, you know, according to studies, red, blah, 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 angers bulls, increases, it makes people angry. So scientists say that, so wear red, you know. So you have to stick in, like, so whether it's study, whether it's stats, whenever you make a claim, you always want to follow up with some sort of proof or testimonial. Otherwise, for example, you could say, yeah, we can make you bigger, stronger, faster in the next 10 days. You know, it's a nice claim, but how? You know, that's where the convincing is done. So always include proof with your claims.
Yeah, good point. I think proof and slash or track record. So if you've done some great stuff with your product, have some sort of case studies or just a list of logos of companies that you worked with or something. And I think that's one last thing that just came up now is I think copy is important, but I think in many cases it also has to work together with the graphics and with the overall marketing collateral that you're putting out there.
I think copy should, in a way, lead. I mean, someone will argue against me, but I think graphics should work with copy, not the other way around. Copy shouldn't work around graphics. Graphics should be used to support copy.
Oh, absolutely. I think because the copy gives you the story, right? But yeah. I think still things like logos or, I don't know, if you worked with Bill Gates and you slap a photo of you and Bill Gates there or something, I think it enhances whatever's written there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, then it's not a case of design. It's a case of proof.
Yeah. 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 I see that you have what makes good copy here on the list next. I guess my question kind of relates to that. I was wondering, because I think you see different types of copy, right? You see like really long sales letters and you see like really snappy, like 5-sentence emails and things like that.
Yeah.
Do you think either of those is like inherently better, or does it really matter? Does it really depend on the situation, or?
It's a hard thing to say. The first thing is, before good copy, there is the offer or whatever you're selling, right?
Yeah.
One thing to remember is bad copy can still sell a good offer, but a bad offer, you know, a good copy will never save a bad offer. So that's one thing to keep in mind. If the product is bad, then, you know, no amount of good copy will save it, at least if it does in the short term, not in the long term. And the other part of a good offer is not a good offer, but like in general, making it stick or making a hit is the list. You know, whether it's your email list or it's the demographic of the advertising that you're going to take out on Facebook or something. If the list isn't in line with the offer, that's also going to make it miss. You know, that's not, so the offer and the list are very important. And afterwards, the copy does the rest of the job. So those two, you know, do most of the pulling.
All right. So the offer is then essentially the product, and the list is essentially your target audience for the...
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess they're both important, but there's not necessarily only one combination of them, right? So you could have one piece of software, for example, like Excel, and then you could write different copy for different audiences. Like maybe somebody wants to build financial models in it. So you write the copy to be targeting, especially those people. And then maybe there's people that make lists of whatever, lists of books in Excel. So maybe there's copy targeting, especially those people and things like that, right?
Yeah.
That's a big part of it, I guess.
I forget what exactly the split is. Some say it's like, you know, 40-20-20, where the first comes the audience, first comes your list, and then comes the offer, and then comes the actual copy. In terms of what does the most, you know, what's the most important part or what carries the most weight? But, you know, for the most part, the offer and the audience hold the most weight, and copy does like the rest, kind of the rest of the job. Offer and list aside, what makes good copy is, this is something hard to tell if you're not on the inside and if you don't have context in comparison with other ads. For example, in advertising and copywriting and marketing in general, you'll have a lot of people that will send you like an example, like, oh, I thought this was really clever, blah, blah, blah. This is some wonderful copywriting there. It's very hard to judge copy without, one, knowing how well that specific ad did, and two, how well that specific ad did in comparison to other ads. So literally, you're just guessing. So the person, you know, if you don't have stats, then you'll never know, just a guessing game. You can probably come up with an educated guess based on, you know, your experience as a copywriter, but for the most part, you know, it's one of these things that you really need to have the stats for. So what makes good copy is, one, you need to know the stats. Two, you need to have a context, good versus what, which means you have to look at all your other previous ads, whether not just that. When I say ads, I also mean like emails or banners or Google ads or Bing ads, Facebook ads, you know, so, or videos or video scripts, for example.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say for sure, but for the most part, you know, if you're missing a call to action, if you're missing urgency, if you're missing a deadline, if you're missing a good offer or benefits, then it's definitely not good copy.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at you know, send an email and think, oh, that was really clever. That is not a litmus test for whether it's good or not.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, because I think a lot of people, I think this happens in design, this happens in copywriting, probably in a lot of different fields. But a lot of people tend to go kind of with their gut, even though they have no experience in that field. And that's how they choose their designer. That's how they choose their copywriter. That's how they choose their whatever. But yeah. But I think, yeah, like you just said, what really matters is the performance. So whether you like the copy or not, I mean, of course, it's nice if you like it, but that's not the criteria by which it should be judged, right? Because as you said, the purpose of copy is to drive some sort of action. And whether that action's sales, or whether it's newsletter subscriptions or free sample requests or whatever it might be, what matters ultimately is the metric behind it. So how many people did you get to your website, and how many people did actually take the action that you wanted them to take, or how many people how much revenue did that actually drive? And sometimes it will be correlated with what you like, and if you have good instincts, it will probably be often correlated with what you like. But yeah, never let the guiding principle be just, oh, I like this. There's got to be something more.
Yeah. So and you also mentioned, you know, like short versus long copy. Again, it depends. There are no absolute answers. I mean, yeah. There are no absolute answers in marketing, in terms of, like, you know, marketing laws. Some are very much valid. For example, you know, urgency really makes a big deal, and most sales happen within the last 48 hours of the sale. But, you know, there's no absolute really, and that's why it's important to test. So if I were to re-answer that question again, what makes good copy is, one, context and stats. If you don't know them, then you can't judge good copy. Two, testing, because, you know, for the most part, I think even with paid advertising, for most people, their first ad or their first few ads are always at a loss until they figure out what's working.
Yeah.
So context and stats, testing, and of course the basic elements, like, you know, the call to action, offer, and headline, benefits. You know, if imagine you put out an ad and you forget to put a call to action, that's not exactly a good ad. So other than that, everything should be tested.
$500 and nothing else, that probably wouldn't sell well.
Yeah. Well, it also depends, you know, on the demographic. If you just happen to have a list of, you know, people ready to buy, they're just like hot, bought Lego rockets, then it can work. You know, see, that's how it gets a little bit more complicated. It really depends on your list. If you go ahead.
I'd still argue you still need some sort of offer and call to action, right? You need some sort of button. I mean, you can rely on people going to Google and searching buy a Lego rocket or whatever, but you always want to make it as smooth as possible for the user. I guess that's probably something we should include in the list.
Yeah.
Let's say, for example, you release a new book and everybody knows they can buy the new book on Amazon, but you should still probably include the link there, right? And something
Call to action.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think those are what would make, or ultimately make, good copy. Testing the basic elements of copy and context and stats, so you can improve upon it.
So let me ask a question that I guess complicates this further. One, where would you start? So would you just write like two different samples of copy and test them against each other and figure out which one's better? And two is, what if you don't have a large enough sample size? So let's say I'm an aircraft broker selling, I don't know, used aircraft. I think the sample size is much lower than, let's say, if you're saying selling a $25 book or a $50 online course or something, right? How would you deal with that situation? That's actually a situation I faced.
Well, how is the sales letter or advertising delivered?
Well, it could be an email. It could be an actual Google ad for like keyword, let's say private jet charters or something.
For ads, well, first, yes, I would, to answer your first question, I would come up with two variations and then run them against each other and put in a key difference, so I know which element did the pulling, you would say. You know, for example, one ad had a mention of the word free and the other one did not, or some sort of free bonus.
Okay, so there needs to be some
second question.
So there needs to be some sort of significant difference so that you can actually judge about what it is that's causing this ad to perform.
Yeah, but otherwise you want to keep it all equal, element aside, just so you can track that, you know. It should be almost alike minus the whatever variable that you want to stick in there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, for example, you could test headlines, but the description copy should be completely the same if it's an ad. Or you could change up little elements inside the headline. For example, one headline contains free, the other headline does not. Although I'm not sure if you're allowed to use free in Google Ads, probably not. So, yeah.
Yeah, so what about the small sample size? Because I think it's much easier to get data on selling like lower ticket items, or like if you're Apple or something, then of course, even for higher ticket items. But even then, I think there's a difference between the amount of data you can get for selling like a $1,000 item or a $50 item compared to like a $50,000 item, right?
Yeah.
To get statistical significance or something when you do your testing.
With a smaller sample size, for example, if it's driving traffic to a page, then you would want to have that experiment run for as long as possible. I think longer time duration should kind of provide a bit more clarity, even if the sample size is small. Or you can run multiple tests. For example, if it's an email and you're sending out emails to like 20 people or 100 people at a time, then you know you want to continue and run that test multiple times and amalgamate, or you know, tally up the results and see if there's any pattern there.
All right. Yes. Yeah, so I guess if you can afford to run it long enough, then you just got to wait to get the data. And then I guess if you're starting, you just kind of got to go with your gut and with the best practices.
Yeah. Yeah, it's best to get like enough of an audience to actually get meaningful results.
Yeah, that makes sense. So up to that point, essentially, I guess. Yeah, you just got to do your best because you got to start somewhere.
Right? Yeah, and then for like a new side hustler, I guess in a way you're kind of flying blind until you have enough data to work with. But I think that's the case with all aspects of it. You know, you have to also write a lot of blogs to see which blog works best. It just it comes with time.
Yeah, true. Then I guess there's an element of randomness in everything.
Yeah.
Got to start and sort through. But yeah, I guess one of the reasons I brought this up is exactly what you mentioned is the side hustles. And I think a lot of side hustlers don't necessarily have the volume to get any sort of meaningful data any soon, for example. Mm-hmm. Do you think copywriting can be useful for side hustlers? And if so, in what ways?
Definitely. If you are... Well, actually, I think it's useful... I was going to say if you're in the online space, it would be useful, but I think it would definitely be useful across the board. If, for example, if you're writing emails to people whose attention you want, and, you know, I think there are elements of copy that you can weave in to improve. For example, if you're pitching your writing services or, I don't know, SEO services, design services, copywriting services, you know, one of the best words in marketing is free, you know, so and free definitely is a benefit. It's an essential element of copy. And for example, you could be like, hey, I'm an aspiring blah, blah, blah. Here's my portfolio. I'm willing to do X amount of work for free to, you know, and if my first few tests work out, I would be interested in, you know, becoming a paid blah, blah, blah of sorts, you know, and that would be a pretty good offer. You know, like I'll do X amount of work for free. In return, you lose nothing. So that's one example. You know, if you're writing a blog and you want people to join your newsletter, of course, you know, so everything always comes down to the offer and the benefit. What can you offer them? Playing around with the offer can improve your conversion. So if you just say join my newsletter, people might not join that. But if you say like, hey, join my newsletter, and you get, I don't know, the top 10 tips on how to have a successful blog or something, then someone out there probably will listen a little closer than just join my newsletter.
Yeah, I think you brought up a really great point earlier with the example of somebody that's trying to pitch their services. Because when I went into this episode, I was thinking that, if somebody's doing a blog and he's trying to sell an ebook or trying to get subscribers or something, that's something where copywriting could be useful. But actually, based on what you just brought up, I think pretty much everybody should know the basics of copywriting, regardless of whether it's for side hustles or not, I guess, right? Because at the end of the day, it's a sales skill, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's essentially, well, the basic, the most fundamental, I would say, definition of copywriting is it's salesmanship in print.
That's good.
Of course, some people would argue against that. They would say, like, you know, there's copywriting for branding, there's copywriting for X, Y, and Z. But, you know, if you're out there to make money, you know, ultimately what you want is people to jump in and buy, so... That is the classic definition of copywriting.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. And I mean, yeah, we could argue about whether branding's selling or whether trying to get somebody to subscribe to an email newsletter is selling or whether you're trying to get a job is selling. But at the end of the day, they're all things that require pretty similar skill set, I'd argue. And I think that's what essentially makes them sales.
Yeah. Actually, I forgot to mention for what makes good copy. One thing I forgot to mention. Well, may as well bring it up now. Knowing your target audience and doing your research, because if you don't know what makes them move or what makes them tick, then, you know, you can't exactly craft a good offer or write good copy for them.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point. And I'd actually add one point here, which is make sure your copywriter knows your space. Because I think one thing that can ruin copy, at least based on me seeing different ads and different articles and things like that, is when somebody doesn't know the right terminology.
Yeah.
And like, let's say somebody was trying to sell you an airplane and they never call it an airplane. They call it that thing with wings or something, right? It's like I think every space has some sort of vocabulary that you have to follow, essentially, just so that the people know that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because obviously, if you want to convert a certain kind of person, you need to be speaking their language. I mean, to put it bluntly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it
is. With other side hustles, for example, on the last episode, we talked about how to have a lawn mowing business as a side hustle. You know, you could come up with flyers and you could put up a really good offer on the flyer. Or like you said, start a website and write up the offer. Again, the offer will be the key driver. Copywriting helps you craft the offer, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, for example, Domino's. Was it Domino's or was it some other pizza company where, so like, you know, it's either, if it's not there in 30 minutes, it's yours free. Like, that's a very compelling offer.
Yeah.
So, you know, so you could take it pretty much to any side hustle that you have. If you're doing music, then what do you want? You want an audience base. How do you get an audience base? You get them to either sign up for YouTube, for your newsletter and whatnot. And for that, you got to give them a benefit as to, you know, why they should sign up. And even if when you start selling your music, well, I don't know. Actually, I can't really speak much in terms of music as to what makes people buy. But at least getting them to join is will definitely be useful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think whether it's music or whether it's, I don't know, travel, whether it's Lego, whatever it is, there's always, I think if you look at different blogs and things like that, you can always see the same patterns, right? And I think it's part of it is just everybody's copying everybody else. But I think it's also a testament to the fact that it actually works. And you will oftentimes see people offering something for free to subscribe. That works very well. And you always see like time-limited sales.
Yeah,
those work really well, right? Evergreen funnels or whatever they call them, where you get the timer at the bottom of the screen saying you got the offer for just 2 more hours or something. Like that sort of scarcity always seems to work. So I think whether it's music or whatever else it is, I think a lot of the principles apply across the board.
Yeah. And if you're running social media, then copywriting can be applied to your social media messages if you want the user to jump over from Facebook to whatever service you're promoting.
Yeah, just wondering if somebody wanted to start a side hustle as a copywriter, because I think that's another way to utilize copywriting in your side hustle and the most direct way. Where would you suggest they start? How did you get started with copywriting?
Well,
you were interested in for a long time, or is it something that kind of just happened randomly and then you got into it? Or
it's a good question. I was lucky enough to have it be part of the job. Like I kind of grew into it, if that answers your question.
Yeah, that answers. You got different responsibilities, but eventually one of them was copywriting and sort of grew on you.
And then also manage copywriters and such. So. But in my case, I was lucky to have it like in my full-time job. Otherwise, I don't know if I would have went for it exactly, because it's not one of these things that you think of like one day, like, huh, I want to be a copywriter. It's like, only, I guess, until you're in the commerce space or the business space or what, I don't know what would it be. But, I imagine most, for example, college students, they wouldn't think of, I want to do copywriting for a job. That's not really on the top of their mind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So what if a college kid is listening to this episode and he or she thinks, oh, maybe I should try copywriting as a side hustle. Where would you recommend they start? Like, is there any learning resources that you would recommend, or any books, any blogs, any videotapes, CDs, audio cassettes?
Do we have anything older than an audio cassette? Betamax?
NLP?
Well, how to learn it? To get started, I guess everyone points to the late Gary Halbert. Gary Halbert was like one of the, I guess, most famous copywriters, I think, back in the early 90s and 80s.
Yeah. And just a note here.
He wrote a few books on it.
if whoever's listening to this has no idea how to spell that name, just like I have no idea, we'll be putting this in the show notes. So don't.
Yeah. So he wrote something called the Gary Halbert Letters. I guess it was a part service and also a part like letters to his kids and to teach them how to do copy and teach them marketing business. So I would recommend just Googling Gary Halbert and seeing, going to the website and learning from that. That aside, there are a lot of great books. One I would suggest is How to Write a Good Advertisement by Victor Schwab. I think that is very comprehensive and also at the same time kind of beginner friendly. There are many books on advertising actually, but this one is like from the 1960s or 1950s and it still stands true today. Well, the reason is because, you know, human emotions and human psychology has not really changed much in however long we've been around.
Yeah.
Even though some people would like to argue differently. So, yeah. So even the point being the book is from like 1950s to the 1960s, but it still stands true today. So I would recommend How to Write a Good Advertisement by Victor Schwab. I would recommend the Gary Halbert Letters by Gary Halbert. You can probably find these on Amazon. There are many books on copywriting, but you know, you pick one. A lot of them are actually in some way rehashes of the other. A lot of them cover the basic things, you know, the most important things like the headline, the offer, the benefits, testimonials, the urgency, the call to action, and how to write good copy.
Yeah.
A lot of them, all of them stress that you must test. So I think if you read one, you've kind of read them all.
I see.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of like, unless you want to go searching for nuggets, I think one would be good enough for now. On blogs to follow out, I would recommend the Neville Medora copywriting course. If you Google copywriting course, he has some good blog entries. I think he also wrote his own book on how to write. But otherwise, to learn copywriting, it's without actual practice, without actually seeing how it lands, I think it's very, very hard to learn and improve on. So resources aside, I think it's best to have a channel where you can practice and improve. Otherwise, you know, it's like dancing without an audience. You won't know, or, you know, being a stand-up comedian without an audience. You'll never know if it's good or not.
Yeah.
And at that point, you should either get a job that requires it or you should offer your services. And if you do offer your services to write copy, absolutely, absolutely demand that they give you the results. Otherwise, you know, without the results and without knowing the metrics, you know, you're dead in the water. You don't know if anything worked.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think, one, the results give you the assurance, or they give you the information that it actually worked. And two, you can actually use those as your sales material. It
gives exactly. You some
credibility. As long as you're doing a good job, of course. If your client comes back saying they didn't sell anything because of your copywriting, then keep that in the closet.
Yeah. Oh, I have a lot of those.
Yeah. All right. So that was kind of from the point of view of I want to be a side hustler and I want to try to be a copywriter. Now, how about the other way around? So let's say I'm running a bunch of different blogs and I have a couple of different writers, as you know. But what if I wanted to write some actual copy, and what if I wanted to hire a copywriter? What would you say would be some of the things to watch out for when trying to hire somebody in this role?
I think first you should ask them for their portfolio so you could see their past work. And at the same time, if possible, if they could present stats on how they improved things on other places. I think a lot of beginner copywriters may not be able to offer that. And that's where you're kind of gambling if you're going to hire and you want like instant ROI on your money.
Yeah.
So, but like also like you mentioned in the past, I think it is important for you to get a basic understanding of how it works and what's necessary before you kind of delegate it to someone else.
Okay, so you should have at least some sort of understanding before you try to hire somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess.
That way, at least you can know if they're on point or not. Because ultimately, your, you know, USP, your unique selling proposition, your offer, is something that you probably know better than any stranger that lands on your, not any stranger, but any copywriter that you hire. And these are the things that you gotta kind of tell them. I think they could only know if they spent years with you. But first, you kind of have to know what's your unique selling proposition, you know, your offer. What is unique about your audience that you can tell the copywriter?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll be guessing, and they'll try to stay within the elements of the copy, but they may not hit it as well as they would have if you told them a little more about your audience, more about what are your unique points and what sells and what doesn't sell.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think that makes a lot of sense. So on the hiring side, I guess the portfolio, and if possible, with some sort of data, backed by data, because otherwise you're gambling, like we said before, right?
Yeah.
And then I think you're answering another question that I had, which is how to be a good client of a copywriter. And I think you answered a lot of it already, which is provide as much information about what it is that you do and about your company or about your blog and about the sort of audience that you're targeting and things like that, right? Any other things that I should keep in mind if I get into a situation where I'm trying to hire a copywriter?
Well, a good copywriter, and let's say there will be an interview round before you try to hire him, right? I think a good copywriter will come with you with a lot of questions, and you are the one who will be doing most of the talking. And they'll be the ones taking notes and like taking everything that you say and then later building it up into copy. So if they don't have like a kind of a list of questions for you to answer about your business, then, you know, then they're probably really, really fresh.
All right. So look for somebody that has their thing together and that has questions ready for you and that knows how to understand your problem.
Exactly. But you have to kind of understand your problem first, and you have to understand your own sales first before you pass it over to someone else. But yeah, since you mentioned it, to be a good client, I think copywriters hate when you edit their work. So don't edit their work.
All right. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I would hope that if the copywriter is good, there would be little to no editing required. I think that's one. And I guess the other thing that I just thought of is I would assume copywriters don't like to work with people that have no idea what it is that they're trying to sell and that don't have any sort of track record, right? I would assume copywriters like to take something that's already selling sort of okay, but that can be taken to the next level with the right copy.
It's a very broad question. It depends, because there's a lot of people willing to write for money on Upwork.
Okay, money can buy you almost.
Yeah. Did you want to restate that question or?
Yeah, so I guess what I'm trying to ask is like, because I've seen some companies and seen some people that have no idea what it is that they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine that makes it really hard. Like if I come to you and I give you some random thing, but I have no idea who the target audience is or who I'm trying to sell it to or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, essentially, I guess my point is the copywriters are not magicians, right? It's like you have to have some solid base to, and I guess it comes back to the offer. Like you have to have something real behind it.
Yeah, you need a USP, unique selling proposition. You have to get your core business down the first and understand what sells before you pass it on to someone else. Because again, a copywriter won't know your business as well as you do.
Yeah, so if you're trying to hire a copywriter, make sure you understand your business first and make sure there's...
Yeah, understand you have a business first, whether you have a business or not. Because, you know, like I said, like, you know, a good offer can be sold by bad copy, but a bad offer can't be sold even by the best copy.
Long term.
Exactly. I mean, like maybe you could pull off like a quick win, but definitely not long term.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point. Again, you can package something useless into a nice and shiny package, but if you do it long enough, I guess people will just, the word of mouth will start spreading around.
In other words, like if there is no need for it, there's no market for it, then it won't sell. There's that Gary Halbert anecdote or saying, I guess, when he asked his students, like, you know, if you were to start a hamburger shop, what advantage would you want? And everyone was saying, I want premium patties. I want, you know, closer location to whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he said, all I want is a starving crowd. So you need that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. I think that's a great example of, actually focusing something around the need rather than the product. And I think that's what a lot of copywriters do. You're not selling them hamburger, you're selling them a way to stop being hungry while having some fun or while enjoying their food along the way, right?
Exactly, yeah.
What was it? Give me a hungry crowd?
Yeah, give me a hungry crowd. So if you have a hungry crowd, then you already have an offer. Then you already have something that works. But if you don't have a hungry crowd, meaning you don't have an audience that cares about what you need, then you don't exactly have a product. Possibly you don't have a product and you don't have a proper business.
Agreed. All right. And I'm looking for our notes. There's one last question that I see here. I think we partially answered it. But if you're running a business, should you hire a copywriter or should you do it yourself? And I think partially we said, you said that it's better to know the basics yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But zooming out of that, what would you say? Is it should you just try to do it yourself, period? Or should you do it yourself in the beginning, but is it better to outsource it eventually? Or is it so critical that you essentially control the message 100% that that you should keep it within your domain? Or
I think copywriting, let's say we're talking about a company that has a staff, right? I think it should be kept in-house, not outsourced for the most part. I could be wrong, but like, I think the business must control the messaging.
Okay, so ideally you'd want to, I guess whether outsourced or in-house, ideally you'd want to work with the same copywriter for a long time, right?
Exactly. Because let's say you're working with a freelance copywriter, and obviously they're not going to get things right on the first few gigs, but eventually they'll start understanding what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, with time, they'll get better. And ultimately, that's what kind of what you want. It's very rare, I think, to come across someone that's like, unless you're paying like millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars to an A-list copywriter, it's very rare to find someone that's able to hit home runs initially and consistently. So I think it's better to work with someone long term and kind of build them up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess if possible, keep it in house. And if not possible, then at least try to find somebody that you can work with long term. Because if you hire somebody for just a single project, then the chances that they will ace it right there on the first try are pretty low. Unless you go for the top talent. Whereas if you work with somebody long term, then even if the first few projects are a flop, eventually they're going to learn your company, learn your value, learn what is it that you're providing, and they're going to do a better job. Does that roughly summarize what you just said?
Sounds about right. But, you know, I think I would imagine that you've done enough initial work to make sure that at least it doesn't flop, you know.
Okay, so don't have projects flop.
Benchmark level. Yeah. At least whatever he provides, you know, at least meets the minimum benchmark, because, you know, flops aren't good for business.
That's a good point. Yeah, I guess whatever you have your copywriter do, make sure he writes about what you're actually selling. So if you're selling red t-shirts, don't have him write about socks and iPhone. At least meet some sort of baseline.
Yeah, they kind of have to know your audience and what you're selling.
Yeah.
And also be users and understand the behavior of, you know, people using that product as well. And that kind of that comes over time.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Yeah, I think we covered pretty much all the points that we had here. Do you have any last minute tips about copywriting?
Last minute tips, huh? Revise, I think revision. Probably I should have also stuck that into like 2 and 3. Every time you write something, always overwrite, and always consider your first draft to be garbage, but like it's a necessary piece of garbage. It's like, so I kind of also nowadays I kind of see it as sculpting, you know, like if you imagine someone making a statue, what they're going to do is they're going to have like a big brick, which is essentially your content. Or if you put it into like our terms, it's the article that we wrote or something, or it's like 900 pages of sales copy. Once you have that base to work with, then starts the editing and revision process, which probably is the most important one, where you chip away at all the things that are necessary, you know, and you rearrange the structure. I think that's where you will come across good copy.
I love that sculpting analogy, because when I write for some of the blogs that I own, then I'm not too picky about the text. So usually I just write something and then do minimal editing. But when I submit something to magazine, then of course the expected quality is much higher. And usually I spend like 25% of the time just writing the first draft, and then it's 75% just cutting stuff out, moving things around, adding a thing here, generally just removing things.
Yeah,
from the first kind of brain dump. So I think that's a very good tip in terms of treat your first draft as a necessary trash.
Necessary trash. Yeah. Have you done any copywriting, Casey?
I've done some for my projects and stuff like that, but nothing serious. I think I could write an okay copy. I don't think I could write like super amazing copy, but I think I've taken away a few tips from today. So hopefully, starting tomorrow, it will be better.
All right. Well, we look forward to your results on the next podcast, on the Copywriting and Stuff podcast.
I'll judge by the size of my bank account after I publish the results.
All right. Sounds good. Do we want to leave the listeners today with any key insights, even though I was kind of talking for most of this part? What do you think?
No, to me, one key insight would be regardless of what it is that you do, there's always some sort of sales or convincing involved. And to convince somebody through text, you got to be good at copywriting. So don't think about what is your job. I think you should still know the basics of copywriting, regardless of what your job is. I think that would be one of my takeaways from today. Revise. So put something down on paper and then go over it and just like you said, just sculpt it and keep revising it until it's good. And three, I think the elements of copy that you mentioned, just make sure when you write some sort of copy and you want users to take some sort of action, make sure to have the headline, to have the offer, to have some sort of benefits, because otherwise, why would I do what you want me to do? Ideally have some sort of urgency or scarcity. So whether that's whatever, we have 50 of these and we're not printing anymore, or we have, we have a sale that's going on only for the next 5 hours, or evergreen funnels, or whatever you want to do. And then most importantly, I think, do not forget the call to action, because even if everybody knows that that they can find your book on Amazon, until you tell them to click on the button and to buy it on Amazon, I'd say the conversion is going to be lower, because you want as little friction as possible between the user reading your copy and the user actually taking the action.
Yeah.
Takeaways and a summary of today, I guess.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the 21st episode of the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast with Kay Shinyuri. Today's topic was a quick, brief introduction into copywriting. If you want to get access to all the books and articles and any of the resources we mentioned inside, please visit the show notes at sidehustlesandstuff.com/E21. Also, if you do want to start your own side hustle and put your project out into the world, again, visit the show notes, sidehustlesandstuff.com/E21. Check out Bluehost, where you could buy your own website, start publishing, whether you're just into writing articles or posting music or shirts or designs, start publishing your project into the world. A website makes it real. This has been the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast with Kay Shinyuri.
Talk to you later. Now,
what was our intro again?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the
episode 21. Ladies and gentlemen, okay. Again, or get one pizza when you buy one free. That's a mistake. Get one pizza when you buy one.
On selling, again, it's my damn it. Again.
Well, what was the question? How do I circle back? How do we get here?
How can you use it for side hustles?
By the way, this will be a really good episode for bloopers. Talk to you next time. Am I doing the editing, or are you doing?
I think you're doing this.
Okay, cool.